listening to Fresh Take.
You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.
It is what to do. Welcome to Fresh Take, the rundown. Joshua, Adam, William, Arbuthnot with the talent, sexy, dangerous, the Devoneer. He does like animals. It's Devin Seal, unlike High Evolutionary.
Oh, I was like, what are people saying about me that implies I do not like animals?
So it turns out James Gunn and Marvel were like, man, we haven't had a good villain since Thanos. What do we have to do to make people really hate someone? Well, you could just be mean to animals. Yes! That works.
Just rip it right in half. It's funny, my partner basically was trying to goad me into like reviewing the movie for a little bit, and I was like, why? Like, so we went together. We're walking out of there. She's like, oh, what'd you think? And I was like, why are you asking me so quickly? Like, it means that she had something on her mind to tell me. And so I finally dragged it out of her. And she's like, I just want to let you know, if I knew that there was this amount of like animal cruelty in this movie, I would not have come.
I mean, I did warn. I said, make sure she brings tissues.
She didn't cry. She didn't cry, but she was highly disturbed by the animal cruelty.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, it was an adjustment. I think a lot of things have came out of it. It's an uptick from Marvel. Devin, I say this, hasn't seen Ant-Man, so
no.
We'll have that review in like 2 weeks when that inevitably comes on Disney Plus now.
Yeah.
But I thought the good thing about this, first of all, was that you probably didn't really need to see anything else. I mean, seeing the other Guardians helped, and then Endgame, I think that's all you really needed to see, to be completely honest. But I also think you could probably go into this somewhat fresh and be okay. Like, even if you had like a friend or a family member or a partner and they just sat down and watched the Christmas special with you,
sure,
I think even then they kind of get the gist of what things are a little bit, except for the Gamora stuff. The Gamora stuff may be a little, I mean, look, I've seen all 30 plus Marvel movies and the Gamora stuff is still confusing to me. So
what's confusing about it? She doesn't,
they're just like, she's our Gamora, but she's the past Gamora, but she might remember stuff, but she doesn't remember stuff. Anyways,
I love her.
She's a Ravager. Okay. I love that too. Like, James Gunn was pretty pissed off of how Star-Lord was treated in Infinity War with him punching Thanos. And I love that they made Star-Lord say like, I almost fucked up the whole universe trying to save her.
You know what? Both of those things did happen. Like, that is kind of a glaring omission in like in Endgame. It is also something very, very Peter Quilly, you know? So,
yeah.
It can kind of be both. Peter Quinn.
As Gamora kept on calling him.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I thought they changed the last name on him, and then I was really confused for a second. And I was like, what is going on?
I thought, I think if you're a DC fan like I am, and you know, you're hopeful for the super and the big Superman fan like I am, and you're hopeful for the future of this next level of DCE, you feel pretty good after this. I think the debate going on this week was, what is the best Marvel trilogy? If you don't count the Avengers, I still think it's Cap. But yes, you could convince me it's Guardians.
So what are we talking about here? Are we talking about the best trilogy? So actually, I kind of had a similar conversation with my partner leaving to the theater as well. It was a half of a conversation about animal cruelty, and it was half a conversation about, they did a pretty good job of explaining everything without, you know, if you had taken, you know, Marvel Studios off the main title and you just watched 1, 2, and 3 Guardians of the Galaxy, it would explain 94%.
Yeah.
And that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So is it the best trilogy because it doesn't really reference a whole lot of other things from the other movies? And yes, we're skipping past the Gamora stuff. By that token, it probably is the best trilogy.
Yeah, it's if the standalone. I mean, it's not Ant-Man, it's not Thor, it's not Iron Man.
Is it the best Marvel trilogy though? No. It's Captain America.
Yeah. I mean, Spider-Man's up there too.
Well, and the reason why we're so high on Captain America is every one of those waves that each one of those movies creates influenced so many parts of that phase. Like they were the jumping off points for a lot of other things in terms of Winter Soldier, Ultron, Hydra. Like it was the gift that kept on giving, because it was probably the most fleshed out universe. But Guardians of the Galaxy is probably the most well-made, consistent series.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm pretty confident saying that.
You also see too with Guardians, the thing that it has the Cap didn't is Civil War is a Cap movie, but it's not a Cap movie, but it is a Cap movie technically. But like, I don't know if it really is. It's almost like a Avengers movie, kinda.
It's kind of like the pre-Avengers 2. Yeah. Yeah.
So by that standpoint, I may stand by to say that Guardians is there. You and I both gave this a solid 8.
Yes.
And I think it definitely deserved it. I think as time goes by, maybe I'll appreciate it a little bit more. I think the journey and the storytelling of everything with Rocket, and I think the core, James Gunn didn't forget what the core of the Guardians was. And it does kind of what, you know, Fast and Furious does in a little bit, but it does it way more, like, way better. And with heartfelt, like of just like, having someone that's an outsider, for example. I kind of look at it in a way, I think it was Fast 5 or 5-6, for example. So the Lottie character, she has amnesia, right? And she comes back and she can't understand why the crew is so tight and everything like that, and why it's about family. And I totally forget how the way that they got to it, but take that Lottie character and her having amnesia and not understanding how this crew in Fast and Furious does what they do and why they come together and why she should care about Dom and everyone there, to what the Guardians crew does with Gamora and how she's at the end there. And I like the realism of it too, of, as Ryan George said today on the pitch meeting, no kissy kissy at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That like, I like the breaking the stereotype, like, and her and Peter lived happily ever after. I like the realistic side of, he realized he had to let go and he had to move forward because that wasn't that person anymore that he loved. The person he loved is gone. This is someone else that's in his life that's cool and is there, but that's not that person.
He had to learn to swim. There were lily pad, jumping from lily pad to lily pad, and he learned to swim.
I'm also mad
because the realistic thing, though, is I guess maybe it's not realistic how often people deal with amnesia or alternate universe realities of each other, but
all the time.
Yeah, when you said that they dealt with amnesia in Fast whatever, I was like, doesn't that happen in cartoons?
I mean, I'm sure it's going to happen with Gal Gadot's character for this next one, too.
Okay, well, it set an interesting, like, you know, we're in a time now where relationships and consent are so important, as they always should have been. But it brought up, I had a lot of questions going through this movie about, like, he's just like constantly badgering her about being in love with her. And like, she's like, it's totally not her. She's not into it, of course. Like that's a weird like parallel for consent. In my mind, I was like, huh. So I'm glad that they landed the plane in an appropriate way. Because you can't make someone love you based off of what used to happen, right? Like, she has to fall in love with him on her very own. And we're not saying that that'll never, ever happen again, because as we saw in the end screen, Star-Lord will return. It's just not going to happen as fast as some people want it. Well, which I think was a nice little payoff.
Star-Lord will return. Will Zoe Saldana return? I'm not sure.
Are there rumors or are there just...
She said she's done. I mean, as far as we know, Batista's done and she's done.
Well, we know Batista's done, but at the same time, kind of like what I talked about with my partner, everyone's done until like a number comes out or there's just a movie script that's just, you know, like Tobey Maguire coming back. Like,
yeah.
Everyone's done until it's like, you know what?
Dave's probably going to DC.
It sounds like they're all going to. It's just a matter of, well, are we sure he's not?
It sounds like he doubled, like he got a new Marvel contract.
And that's fine. You can is there a non-competition clause or anything like that? Like, can you not do both?
I'm not sure. I mean, I would say give a round of applause to Chris Pratt for this past 2 months. Like, dude had some doubts about if he was a movie. There was doubts if he was a movie star or not anymore, if he could draw. And in about, I don't know, 2 weeks here, he's going to have the two biggest box office draws of the year, probably, right, with Mario and that. And all the other stuff with his church and stuff like that, I'm not here to talk about it. But, I mean, anytime you look for any of that stuff, it's all, that's what his church says. He's never said anything publicly. So I'll leave it at that. I mean, we don't really know where those comments lay for him. Obviously, controversial stuff on the outside. But as far as a movie star, right now, I think there was a lot of question if he could still draw or not. And whatever those outside sources were that were dragging people down that made a lot of us roll our eyes about Chris Pratt, it still shows that he still, I mean, I think the franchises attached to it also are a big drawing point too, don't get me wrong, but him as a leading man, still a big time draw.
Well, Guardians are the Marvel movies that your parents watch.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it has such wide appeal. You kind of mentioned earlier, like, lovable group of losers, blah, 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 blah. Pretty good humor. Like, of all the Marvel movies, like, it's known for being the funniest. So, like, let's give it a lot of credit for that. Although there's something about Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man that's always set out to me. But, Josh, you're forgetting one thing. He's so cool.
So cool. I was going to say in the intro, I fucked up the intro. It's like he has seen one of the Chris Pratt movies that has a Beastie Boys song in it so far this year.
Yeah, you know what? It's always
because the big Mario fight also has the Beast, that same No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Literally, it's hilarious. The two big kind of counter fights both have No Sleep Till Brooklyn wrapping up their stories with Chris Pratt character in them.
That's so weird.
And that fight that they had was probably the best Marvel fight since Endgame.
Oh, whew, great. It's Marvel
probably fight. Top three. Like, if I think about Marvel movie fights, I'm thinking about that airport scene and then Endgame. Like, those are the top three, I think, now.
Winter Soldier, Cap in not Civil War, in Winter Soldier,
on the holodeck or whatever.
No, not in the highway was
on
really
the highway.
Good.
Yeah, that's up there too. Yeah.
We can't forget Civil War, Cap, Winter Soldier, and Iron Man. That's a great one.
That's Killmonger, those are, and Black Panther.
Yeah, those are probably the top five. Yeah, in some order. So it's not Dormammu. I've come to bargain.
No, Infinity War, the on Titan, that's up there, obviously.
It's okay. It's not as good as the other ones. It's not as good as the other.
I would say when they did that fight there, I'm just like, this is why I come to these movies. I think that was the nice thing, because even I had hit the fatigue a little bit for some of these movies, right?
Okay.
I had kind of hit, like, when I walked out of Ant-Man, I'm just like, man, what are we doing anymore? Like...
Okay.
You know, like it was fun. I still had fun with that, man. I don't think it's the worst Marvel film like a lot of people do. And I'm still waiting for you to see one scene in particular so we can laugh about it and use it as a quote for the year, because it's the worst quote in movies this year.
In Iron Man, or sorry, in Ant-Man?
Ant-Man. It's probably, okay, it's my worst quote of the year.
And who's it? Which character makes this quote? I need to know.
You'll see.
Oh, it's just that obvious?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's the worst quote from the worst character of the year. I think this kind of regained some of the stuff that Marvel has, but in the same hands, I'm just like, yeah, the Marvels are next, and that looks really bad. I don't know if you had the trailer beforehand. I'm like,
yeah,
man, this looks fucking bad.
Well, I don't think it looks bad. Oh,
compared to this, it does now.
I don't know.
Every time Miss Marvel's on the screen, I'm really, really excited, and I want more time with Kamala.
Okay.
But everybody else, I'm like, I don't really want to be around anybody else.
Okay. Quasar, Phasar, Maria Rambeau.
Yeah.
Not really into. Just,
and she's okay.
She's fine. I don't really have any kind of information as to why I should care about her. Kamala Khan, great job in her television series. quite underrated, actually. Mm-hmm. And then Brie Larson, not really a fan, but I do want to give credit where credit's due for bringing them together. So they're bringing them together as a team up movie that kind of makes sense. They're all the Marvels, blah 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 blah. But also, just like, everyone rolled their eyes when we got all the women in Endgame, right? So this is a little more natural. This feels a little bit better. We don't know where it's going to go. We get Nick Fury back, so hell yeah, yeah, maybe Skrulls.
It's also nice. Just, it wasn't like there's a cameo and this cameo and this cameo. It was like, this is a story about these characters and why we love these characters, and scaring the shit out of you that any of them could die. I think that was the interesting lore that this movie had as well, right? Because mm-hmm. like, there's times when you thought Dave Bautista was going to die. Well, Drax. There was a time when you thought obviously Rocket was going to die. The end scene there with Star-Lord, I was like, this just seems out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
This makes no sense. And I'm like, all of a sudden he forgot his mask? Like, out of all these times, yeah, now he forgot his mask? He literally went through this with his father figure like a few years ago, and yeah, now he's forgetting his mask? Was this just so we could put Adam Warlock in the movie because we had to? Because he didn't really matter and we had to do stuff to make Adam Warlock matter?
Okay, you're bringing up a lot of great points I just can't wait to comment on. First of all, haven't we seen Star-Lord's mask like go from like behind his ear over his face? Like, doesn't he have to like touch a button?
Yeah, it's like nanotechnology more.
Yeah, so it's really not that difficult to just always wear your mask behind your ear.
Yeah.
So let's, you know, the rocket boots itself, I don't really care about the rocket boots. The mask part's kind of weird. Because he's got the guns. He specifically gives his guns to Groot to hold on to for them to go in their showdown or their face off at the end.
Yeah, there. But they're back in the ship afterwards.
No, I get that. I'm just saying. Yeah. You would think, like, if you have time in the wherewithal to bring your signature guns to Groot to hold on for you, but you don't have your signature helmet, that's kind of weird.
Well, and Adam Warlock. Second of all,
we have not even talked about Adam Warlock yet because the movie barely talked about Adam Warlock.
Well, it was just like, oh shit, we promised Adam Warlock would be in this. Fuck. We got this really touching story about like Rocket that's really heartwarming and it's gonna be great. Yeah, but we promised Adam Warlock. Shit, do we have to do him? Well, he's kind of an important character. We probably should have used him for Endgame because he kind of matters in the Infinity Saga. So yes, we kind of need him for Secret Wars. So like, we got to get him out. He can be the one that attacks Rocket, and then like, he'll kind of be here. We'll show he's indestructible. And then at the end,
but he's
like,
not, his, though. That's what his, bothers me.
His mom will die. And then it'll be like, kill my mom. So I guess I'll save Peter because you guys gave me a second chance. Yay.
Did his mom really die?
Yeah. She got blown up on the animal earth.
So I just have questions about so the high
animal
evolutionary
Earth?
No, not animal Earth.
I got a that's lot of questions.
That's actually the least of my questions. High evolutionary created the Sovereign, which are the gold people.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Warlock is the pinnacle of the sovereign race, right? So doesn't it stand to reason that the Sovereign are already kind of like super strong or indestructible? Right? Like, they're not just humans. Like, aren't they like, they're supposed to be like super smart in the perfect society and
super
like
super smart. But remember, they got their stuff blowing up in number two.
Sure, I get that. But like, I don't know. The original time they show up, it leads me to believe that they're actually like, they're not, they have to be god like god level strength, but they're stronger than humans. They're pretty tough. They're also smart. They have a great society, blah, 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 blah. So when she gets got, it's kind of like, that kind of fucks with me a little bit, because then Adam Warlock, who for the first 10 minutes of the movie was like literally indestructible,
Superman, more or less,
got bounced around a couple explosions and suddenly was like, oh, I'm so weak because my shirt fell off.
That's the clip.
but basically, after that, after he survived that one explosion, didn't really have much to give.
No.
Which is then weird, because in my mind, or what I know, I don't know a lot about Adam Warlock. There's a couple things I do. Number one, he does in the comics have the Soul Stone, as he should have in the goddamn movies, even though I wanted it to be Heimdall. Secondly, he is like Thanos level strong, yeah, right? So why is he not Thanos level strong now? And I know that you're like, oh, you took him out of the cocoon too early, but like, I don't know. I got a couple nitpicks here and there, but there are things that the movie does really well.
I think the argument that I've heard was, well, yeah, he's a little bit dense, but remember, he was just kind of born yesterday and he's just going to grow into being more mature. So I guess I can buy that.
Yep, the other cool I didn't mind that.
So when Groot talks and says, I love you guys, James Gunn confirmed this. He's not actually saying that. It's just we finally understand what he's saying.
Yeah, I figured it was something like that. Okay, it was a translation for the audience. Yeah,
yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm like, okay, that's nice.
That's kind of clever. I like that.
And Diesel's like, I can say something.
Well, he was like, I get paid extra for saying more words, right? Yes, I'll say whatever you want me to say.
Talk about a few things in here in a second, but some of the cameos that we didn't have here. More importantly, the one of the more important cameos. So you know, War Pig. It was like the half android pig.
Yes.
Do you know who that was?
Say goodbye to these.
Yeah, goodbye to these. Yep, Judy Greer.
Miss Judy Greer in the weirdest voice cameo possible, probably.
What was the other one that we had? Young Rocket. You know who that was?
No.
That was Sean Gunn.
Okay.
Yep. Cosmo was.
So hey, just 1 second. I want to touch on Sean Gunn for a second there. He's got to be now the world's second most famous mocap person behind Circus.
He's getting there, man. It's interesting because I just watched his Wired autocomplete today with his brother.
Okay.
And he talked about, like, it wasn't something he really thought he would be doing. And right. He's just like, talks about how much he does love doing it now. Like, because he did Weasel, obviously. He's yeah. done Rocket. Who yeah. knows what he'll be doing in the new DC stuff for his brother. He's definitely going to be up there. There's no doubt about that.
He's like in his brother's movies, he basically kind of does it all. And then his brother gives him like one of the dopey roles because it's funny.
Yeah.
Which I think works out really well. It's kind of like, it's like a funny shtick. Like Kraglin, of all the characters in any of the Guardians movies, the fact that Kraglin kind of had a bit of like a hero's turn was like, what? Like, but I wasn't against it.
I do love the whole thing with Cosmo calling her a bad dog and it just kind of going throughout the whole film. It's like, and that's, how dare you call her a bad dog? I'm like, this is just perfect, easy humor.
Exactly. You know what? That's where the movie really, really shines are the scene. Like, okay, so I guess I'll touch on one of my nitpicks a little bit. And the pacing of this movie has got awful. Because you're either about to cry your eyes out because of Rocket and Layla, or you have the family squabbles of the Guardians, which sometimes, a lot of times, works out really, really, really well. But kind of like the screaming goats in Thor, after like the 10th family fight, I was like, okay, I'm over it. Like, have you guys not had these fights a million times before? And now we have to have them now when you're fighting people. Like, I just would have liked a little bit of teamwork before the final fight.
Yep.
Personally speaking.
Yeah, I get it.
That's not to say though, that a lot of times, like the jokes are funny, the conversations are funny. My favorite Guardians little stick thing was probably the color of the buttons on the spacesuits.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like blue is the calm for everybody. And yellow is for red. And then like everyone's like, yeah, it makes total sense. It's totally self-explanatory. How does this not make sense to you? Great joke.
I thought the use on the point of that too, the use of the first F-bomb was perfect. If that was going to be the first F-bomb, I fucking love it.
Very organic, very natural. I mean, the first F-bomb was, it has been rumored for weeks or whatever. It was confirmed, but it was just like people, you know, I wasn't, maybe we're under the impression that it was going to be like in the final fight, like, fuck you.
Yeah.
But no, just like casual, like if you blink and you miss it, like you just missed the F-bomb.
Apparently it was funny. James Gunn, he's done a lot of, I love James Gunn's press this week because he doesn't give a shit. Because he can say whatever the hell he wants to do because he's the head of another studio now. Yeah. So he pisses off Disney. What are they going to fucking do? So it's the best. Like, did you, first off, on the James Gunn press tour, did you hear the whole Infinity Stone thing?
No.
The guy just made that shit in half an hour. And they had to run with it.
What do you mean?
So when they give the stones to the collector in Guardians 1,
yeah,
Kevin Feige came to him and he's like, hey, like, we need to, you know, push the stones for the Infinity Saga, blah, 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 blah. Right, what you need to say. He's like, I know really much about it. I just made all that shit up in half an hour. And they went and made a whole fucking movie over it.
Huh. No way.
Yeah. The other thing was...
He might be being modest because I think that the stones are a little more... They're a little more important than that, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing too was... So he had the line in there and he kept them going with it. He's like, at some point, I think the Disney's going to cut it. And he's like, then we get to the final cut and it's there. And then he gets a call from Feige.
Yeah.
And Feige's like, okay, so you guys went with the F-bomb. He's like, I don't mind, you know, doing it. But, you know, the Russos were also really close to having one in Endgame. And they ultimately decided they didn't want that to be their legacy, to be the ones that had an F-bomb in the Marvel movie. James, do you want that to be your legacy? He's like, I don't fucking care. Yeah, sure, have it.
Now that one makes sense. That does make a lot of sense. Okay, I like Feige being like, are you sure? And then Gunn's like, fuck it. Yeah, let's go. Okay.
Okay, back to a few other camps. So Maria Bakalova, who was in Borat, who I loved in the latest Borat. I thought she was awesome as Cosmo.
Yes, that's her. Like, it doesn't really click at first. I saw her name come up in the credits, and I was like, what? I had to Google it. Very happy for it. And you know what it is? It's like, it's a weird thing where, like, it's a really good fake Russian accent, but at the same time, like, for her, it's like kind of not fake.
Yeah.
So like, but it's also like very comic booky. Like, she sounds like Natalia from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yep. Do you know who Layla was? The otter?
Oh, no.
Double duty. Linda Cardarelli.
Really?
Two Marvel roles now for her.
Dang. I was going to say Gunn's wife, who is in
Peacemaker. Yeah, so the other one. Yeah, she's in the whatever, the gooey place with our guy.
Our guy? Yeah, of course he's our guy.
Fillion, yeah, with Fillion. The head, who I believe in the original, in Guardians 2, was that not Miley Cyrus originally?
She was in there. Was it the head, or was it?
So the head, I thought that was Miley Cyrus. Anyways, in this version,
yeah,
another double duty in Marvel now. That was Tara Strong.
Oh, no way. Okay.
Miss Minutes and Mainframe for her now.
Okay. I thought Miley was a different character.
Maybe. I have to go back and check. Whatever. The dude with the crystal head for Smallville fans, Michael Rosenbaum.
Oh, what? Because I saw his name pop up in the opening credits, and I was like, where is he going to fit in? Like, because I didn't know anything about his character. I really only watched one trailer for this movie.
Yes, by the way. D. Bradley Baker is something called Blurp, which I'm not sure who that was. So I have to go back and check.
Blurp. Okay.
Yeah. And then I don't think there's any other major kind of camp. I do love that Gunn does try to get his friends in there.
Well, I guess I wouldn't really call it a cameo because it was like a very extended long scene.
Yondu?
Excellent use of Yondu.
Yeah.
And I loved how they had to sneak Rooker in because they're like OG best friends pretty much, right?
Yeah. But and now you can officially say he was in all three movies.
That was a great, great use of a dead character. I don't want any like voice in the back of your head, really. I just liked kind of
the emotional aspect.
Yeah, I just liked the emotion.
Come on, boy.
Yeah, I'm good.
I thought, you know, Bradley Cooper was awesome as Rocket in this. That old stuff was good. And then High Evolutionary, kind of going back to what we did. Man, just what an outstanding performance. I mean, I'm not even going to bother giving the actor's name because, unfortunately, I would butcher it.
Chikwundi Awuji.
Thank you. He was awesome in Peacemaker. He was great in Peacemaker.
Yes.
So I had no doubts he was going to be good in this, but he took it to another level in this. Like, he absolutely made him hate you when he joins the Killmonger Thanos level club of top tier villains in Marvel.
He's the second Red Skull, if you know what I mean.
Mm-mm-mm.
He does and a great job.
He kind of has Thanos level ideals, but in a different way.
Sure. Yeah. The best villains are clearly the ones that have.
They think they're right.
But we'll call them grand aspirations. Mm-hmm. From a certain point of view, they could be correct or they're not wrong. It's exactly like Zemo too, right? They're not wrong. Killmonger's kind of the same way. They're not wrong, but they're just taking it too far, which is where the heroes have to draw the line.
Yeah. Drax, I thought, was really good in this.
Acted. As a whole movie is incredibly well acted. I really liked Karen Gillian had tons of great scenes of the borderline of her letting go being a jerk versus kind of having
She was fun awesome as Nebula. That's a great point, Dev.
I just want to go back to there's two things I want to touch on really quickly. Number one, going back to Sean Gunn's so to Kraglin's. Kraglin's got the beer gut, but he still has a Marvel suit, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
So I loved his beer gut in that. And then secondly, yeah, the pacing of the family fights were getting a little much for me. That's where I think it kind of falls off as being a 9 or a 9.5 or a 10 out of 10 movie.
Ben Lathan gave it an 11, by the way.
And I wonder if part of that's going to be revisionist in terms of what we've been going through lately with a lot of these movies.
Talking about the Ringerverse, who I take their opinions high on this stuff.
Yeah.
Everybody else gave it an 8 or 9. And I'm like, that's about right. Like where you and I, and it's funny now having Letterboxd, I get to follow Sean Fantasy now.
Okay.
And I've kind of noticed I'm kind of in step with him. I have Adam's ratings, which are just out of control at times. And I don't really can't make 2 cents of them. But then I get to see Sean Fantasy's at time. Like, oh, I'm kind of, you know, at the same level, more or less, for him. And I just saw another one in here. Our buddy David, he gave it 4.
Yeah, I
gave it 3.5, but I could bump it up to a 4, maybe.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable with it being around that. The action was great. I really want to say that it looked fantastic. It was such a creative film to having to build all those things from scratch, right? The organic thing that they went to just looked weird, looked very practically well done. A lot of the goo was cool. And then of course the last action sequence down the hallway was peak A+ Marvel. So they really touched on some of the things that make you really love the series. And the villain was great. And you know what, we'd be really remiss to not really talk about Rocket's flashbacks as being really emotionally gut punching.
When they shoot Teeth's and Floor and Lila, when Lila gets shot, your heart's just oh, but then when you look back and you see Teeth's and Floor,
yeah,
and you're like, fuck this guy. you're just you're so mad. And look, I mean, more emotional maybe for me a little bit too is recently lost a pet this year.
Yeah.
So it stings a little bit more. And that's maybe one of the reasons Cosmo made me so happy in this one. But I mean, I think at this point, a majority of us, you know, at a certain age have lost pets. And we know that feeling that it takes when you lose a pet. And then having them have this friends and knowing, going back to episode 1, volume 1 of Guardians and talk and Rocket talking about, you don't know the things I've seen and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It clicks so much now. For Rocket's character, really going back to the first episode now, as you were talking about, Devin, everything kind of connects, right? Like Drax, you know, was like, you're never a destroyer, you're a father, and that's why he became Drax the Destroyer, yeah. Right? And so getting to be the father to all those girls there, and kind of Nebula, the way that she went with Thanos. I did, like, even though the joke was in the trailer, I did like, it's like, my father ripped out my eyes. And she's like, he picked a pretty set. It was a perfect line delivery by Chris Pratt.
Stop doing that.
Knock it off.
Yeah, yeah. That's where I think Karen Gillan, like that's where she really shines for me, is that kind of angry, but like, she's a friend, but she's like, has a lot of walls.
She'd be a good Barbara Gordon.
Oh, that would be very good. Who knows? Maybe she's coming back. The saddest part for me of the Rocket stuff was him, you know, when he gains sentience, he's learning how to talk, and he's being shown all these things. Like, he's being shown about the, I guess we'll call it the outside world by High Evolutionary. Then he has to take it back to his friends, the sky stuff. And just even the idea that, like, he was led to believe that they had a chance of like a better life, and they just had to think about that. They had to sit in their cages and just think about what a better life would be. That was really sad for me.
Yeah. I and a point to that too, when he goes back and sees the ant, and he sees after all this time that he's not a badger, that he's not a squirrel, that he's not a beaver, that he is a raccoon.
And Rocket Raccoon.
It was a natural line read. It wasn't corny. It wasn't forced. It worked. Because it was at that point, he wasn't this number. That's who he was. And I couldn't help but feel back to, that was a missed opportunity in the Star Wars sequels, when Finn would have had that opportunity with Phasma. That would have been really bad. I'm not F110 or whatever. It's like, my name is Finn. And then take out Phasma. And it would have been a really cool moment for him to take out Captain Phasma at that point and take on who he is. He's not this stormtrooper that goes by a name. He is Finn. He's the man that he is. And he took out this person that has abused him all these years. And I thought that's what Gunn did so beautifully with Rocket there.
Well, if you want to take it another step further, I'm going to go all the way on this assertion. Not just Finn. I'm a Jedi. Because he should have been a goddamn Jedi, but that's a different story.
We will find out in the next one.
Oh, that's a different story altogether. There's a lot of great touching moments in this film. And even just like going back to like a little bit of the comedy that does work really, really well, which is well within the character's creation. Like, to me, Drax is just like the comedic highlight of basically this whole thing. Like, because it is really nuanced and it's really subtle, and it takes, you know, I think Batista's really, you know, come out of his shell to do that kind of role. Even at the very end, when like the he's like talking to the kids and like, you can speak their language. He's like, yeah, no one ever asked me.
I love the couch cake too. The couch cake had me laughing.
Yeah, like I would have turned down a little bit. I would have a little bit less fighting. Like, I really think the Drax Nebula, Mantis fight was a little much for me.
Yeah,
but especially because they did him so dirty too, like to make him forget that whole fight. I think really lost a little bit of the luster of the actual fight.
They're very selective with Mantis's powers. I thought Palm did a good job in the Mantis performance, as she always does. I think still her highlight of that performance is the Christmas special. I think that's her highlight of being Mantis is the Christmas special. But they're very selective at times where she will delete someone's memory and not delete someone's memory.
Yeah. We don't do it to friends, things like that. But then she just did it to him, which I thought was a little iffy, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. So yeah, solid 8. It's fun. Go see it in theaters. Like it's worth your $10, $12. Yeah.
I guess the last thing too, before we wrap it up, is the soundtrack. The cool thing is that, I don't know if you've seen that clip going around of showing Florence Welch scene, the end playing Dog's Days Are Over, and her getting very emotional about that.
Oh no, I didn't see it. Cool.
So that was cool. I think obviously that, I think the song that's been a song that's kind of stayed with this movie, but the two songs that I've seen the most connected to this movie so far going around have been Creep and No Sleep to Brooklyn.
Yeah, that one is, well, it's funny, like Beastie Boys, since one of their passing has been used. I was told they wouldn't be too commercialized, but they've been used in a couple of movies, but also to great effect. Like, that clip's pretty good. And then they also use it in freaking Star Trek. Mario, but they use the other one in Star Trek. So they use Sabotage. When it pops up, I'm never against it.
Nope. I was happy to hear the Mowglis, San Francisco, which is an indie band that I followed for a while. And was happy to see them get some use in there. Flaming Lips had a song used. Redbone, obviously, at the end. I liked that at the end there.
That was nice. Yep.
The way to the end of there. What did you think about the new Guardians?
I'm fine with it. We barely touched on Warlock. I know we gave it a couple minutes, but
there's not much to talk about.
Underutilized, not very fleshed out. I like the idea of him being born and having to make his own decisions about what's right and wrong. I think they could have pushed that further a little bit. Yeah. And I don't know if I would have liked him to like call the Sovereign his mom and stuff like that. And then for him to like, I like the idea of like him vaporizing that guy. That was kind of funny. The pet thing was kind of weird because like he just vaporized this guy.
Reminded
pet.
Me a lot of Trevor Slattery in Quan Chi, like the same kind of thing.
Yeah, like definitely just kind of a slapsticky kind of thing.
And those, like that animal reminded me of the one in Star Wars that kind of looks the same. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, yeah. I've lost track of that a long time ago, but it looks very similar. But I like the idea of Adam.
That's who he voiced him.
Oh yeah. I like the idea of Adam Warlock though learning morality and joining them and then just being super OP.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, also like Rock Super Wars. Rock Groot was pretty cool too.
The Japanese version Groot, the like that they had of him. The I can't say it.
The kaiju, you know,
kaiju. Thank you. The kaiju.
Yeah, just giant rock. Groot was pretty cool.
Yeah, Groot was used very effectively in this. He was a boss in this. But no, I thought it was a welcome return to kind of the same formula that we like to have. For and the very last thing is for you now. That's like, you know, this is the first Marvel movie you've gone to in the theater since
Eternals.
Wow. So definitely a start.
I don't know, like I didn't feel the need to for a lot of them. We wanted to go to Eternals because like it was, you know, Tuesday, we weren't working and there was like a 12 o'clock show. It's perfect. The other ones I just haven't really felt the need to.
So you saw Spider-Man.
Yeah, we saw Spider-Man. I guess that's I don't really count that per se, but
yeah. And then like I said, Devil see Ant-Man whenever,
like the day it comes out probably.
Yeah, and then we have Secret Invasion in 40 days from today, as we record.
Which is a movie now?
What?
No, which one's a movie? Iron Wars? No, what's it?
Oh, yeah. Armor Wars is a movie now. Yeah.
I don't know. I can't keep track.
But yeah, I thought it was a good way to start the summer movie season. Already $300 million. I don't think it beats Mario, though.
Well, you know what's funny is it really pushes the limits of what PG-13 means nowadays. So,
yeah, I don't think I would take my kids to this. Like, I wouldn't take my nephews to this.
No, there's way too much.
No,
there's like an age where you're probably 9 or 10, 9, yeah. 8 or 9, where you're like, this is cool.
Yeah.
Anything below that, I wouldn't do it.
I don't give a crap about the cursing side of things. No. Lord knows they've heard enough of that around us. But it's more the animal stuff. And like some of the bad guy, like Gaia Evolution is pretty intense at time. It can be scary. And there's a difference between him being scary compared to Bowser being scary, for example, or whatever Illumination or Disney villain. A different level of being scary.
Yeah, he was actually yelling and it did a very good job.
Yeah. All right. We got a part two coming with all the shows this week. Thanks for listening to the Guardians Galaxy review. And until next time, folks, cheers and enjoy the movie.